Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Without wishing to sound sycophantic, it's hard to imagine a more humble talent than Garth Jennings. We're about to discuss just a few of his many extraordinary creative endeavours, though on hearing our conversation, you'd be forgiven for thinking he had next to nothing to do with any of them at all. Don't be fooled. Having founded production company Hammer & Tongs with Dominic Lung and Nick Goldsmith in 1993, Garth has been instrumental in a string of iconic music videos. Think Supergrass, Fatboy Slim, Blur, and Radiohead, and also written and directed Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Son of Rambo, and most recently, Sing. Much then to discuss, starting with Sing, a joyous, glorious animation about a group of animals who enter a singing competition. It also boasts a fabulous score by Joby Talbot, and we'll play you a spot of that as Garth fills us in on the background to the film. Garth, welcome to Soundtrack, and thank you. I've been trying for ages to get you on, because you came on the radio show.
Yeah, it wasn't that then... I was being elusive, though.
No, I know.
I wasn't playing hard to get. I was literally in the wrong country.
Exactly.
But it's like we worked it out
And we wanted to do it face-to-face as well, which is so
much
better.
None of this ISDN line stuff.
No, rubbish. It's only when you make mistakes you do that.
Yeah, it's finally happening, so it's nice to be here.
I feel like you've been part of my world you have been since Christmas Eve last year. Not that I hadn't known you prior to that.
Yeah.
But we went to see Sing on Christmas Eve in LA at the Grove.
Good gracious.
And since then, I would say it's a weekly occurrence for
God.
Us. So thank you for entertaining us regularly over that period of time. When it comes to you and music, there are so many conversations that we can have. So can we start with Sing, if that's
all right? Yeah, sure.
Because congratulations, it's an absolutely wonderful piece of filmmaking. It's a great story, great characters, and the way you use music is phenomenal.
Thank you.
Very excited that there's more to come as well. Where did you start with it? Because there is so much music in it. And I think we touched on this before, that you had to know exactly what you were going to use prior to doing anything, so that you had all that clearance and everything there.
Oh, man. First of all, you've got all the clearances, and then you've got a lot of that stuff has to be re-recorded. And then also, you have to do it in time for the animators.
Yeah.
So a lot of these decisions were made 4 years ago, and most of them were made in the script, because you can't just pick what's hip and cool. The whole point is to find songs that will resonate with the characters. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to make character choices.
Yeah.
Like, what would they be listening to right now? What would be perfect for them to sing right now? And at the same time, you're handling it all like exactly like you would handle making a compilation CD or a playlist nowadays.
Yeah.
I'm showing my age. For your friends.
Still like compilations.
Exactly.
On cassette.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just that thing of like going, oh, wait, I need something now that balances that. If I have too many of that kind of feeling songs, then it's... So you're making it... The movie has to work as a sort of a whole palette.
Yeah.
But also serve those characters. So all this stuff is being written into the script early on. So while I'm writing, I'm playing a lot of the songs through and we're making little choices. Then what happens is, with an animated film, you start making it in an animatic form. It's like a rough drawn version.
Yeah.
When I say rough drawings, that doesn't do the artists who do that bit any justice. They're amazing artists. But it's a black and white version of your movie, and you're not only doing like scratch voices, which means that, you know, myself and people in the office are providing temporary voices, but also we're trying out some of the song ideas and music ideas.
Singing them?
I don't sing any of them. No, but we do get, there's a few people in the office that are good singers.
Yeah.
there's probably a few in this office we're in now. There's always someone who can sing. And you just drag them in, and they'd be
great.
Yeah, so there'd be a lot of. It's like a
lunchtime karaoke.
No, I'm serious. We've done so many, like, you know, Shake It Off, and we've been doing some recently actually for the next one. But and it's such a laugh. Mm. But then, of course, then the real people come along and sort of wipe it out with their superior talent. I stay up too late. Got nothing in my brain. The reason I say that is because it's all being worked out way, way in advance. Yeah.
But then you have to marry these characters and songs to the voices that you eventually cast as those characters as well. And it's incredible synergy.
Yes.
With those, you know, those songs like Taran and I'm Still Standing is one that instantly springs to mind in terms of not only does it fit with the character, but it fits with his voice.
Yeah.
And it's a synergy.
Yeah. Well, that was one of those moments that, first of all, meeting Taran and realising that he could sing when he did this audition for us.
Sing.
He just walked in. He did one of those auditions you always hope you're going to get as a director where somebody just walks in and just blows you away and you get all emotional. Like, oh, that was really good. He was one of those.
No poker face
No, so I would be rubbish on those actual singing competitions. I'd be like, that was amazing. Because it's almost like I struggle sometimes in the casting process if it's very brutal. I get very, I feel for them.
Yeah.
Like when I'm watching those shows, I find it excruciating sometimes. I think a lot of people do. And so I'm like going, I'm willing them on. In the back of my mind, I'm like, come on, Taran Egerton. But no, he was amazing. But that song was already in the story because the whole thing pivoted around it being something that he could play and it would resonate with his character's story, but also just be a really good song that we really loved. Because, yeah, the song's right for the character, but do we want to listen to this for 3 years? Like, we're going to hear it for 3,000 times. So it does have to pass that test in a way, and that one really did. You can never know what it's like. Your blood like a winter freezes just like ice. And there's a cold, lonely light that shines from.
I love in the car when we're listening to the soundtrack as well, which we do a lot as well.
Oh,
when it gets to the audition compilation.
Yes.
And then it goes, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Look at her butt. 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 Come on.
just hearing my four-year-old sing that. Thank you. No, don't.
Well,
kind of
there's a lot of parents have a problem with that.
Oh, I love it.
No, see, I loved it too, but obviously so, otherwise. Yeah. But there's been a lot of parents who are like, you do realise that's from a very inappropriate song. That's for Baby Got Back, and obviously an Anaconda by Nicki Minaj, which is also really quite fruity to say the least. But that hook always used to amuse the hell out of me.
My Anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun.
Oh my gosh, look at her butt. Oh my gosh, look at her butt. Oh my gosh, look at her butt.
Look at her butt.
Look at her butt.
And when you're doing an audition sequence, you're trying to find something that is going to work in like 3 seconds and resonate with people. Most of my audience are very young and probably haven't heard anything they're going to hear in this film. So what's going to work? And that really did. But it's really turned into one of those things where parents saying, thanks. Yeah. Now my kid is just walking around saying, oh my gosh. Yeah, it definitely.
Well, on the school run, it's even better as we walk past the headmistress going in the school. It's brilliant. Yeah. I love it. I didn't know. I mean, I knew Scarlett Johansson could sing as well, but her character is fantastic. And there's that particular song as well that's her and her moment. Is that an original composition?
That's an original song, yeah. That was written for her. And
specifically for her then?
Yeah, for her. We knew who was going to be in the film. We had I'm Still Standing before we had Taron, but we knew we had Scarlett when we were writing that song.
I followed my heart into the fire. Got burned, got broken down by desire. I tried, but the smoke in my eyes left me blurry.
Amazing people that wrote songs for her. It was insane. That's the thing about working on a big film. It's like, oh my god, we can
there's
ask
Black Book of Names.
There's like 20 people on here and they're all amazing. And I wrote them all handwritten thank you letters afterwards, because you can't go with all of them, obviously.
Yeah.
But some of the songs were phenomenal. They were brilliant. They just didn't fit the specific criteria for that point in the story. But that one song did, and it worked perfectly. She came in and just sort of nailed it. It's very weird to be working with people who can just do everything.
Yeah.
Okay, that's their default setting. It's just...
You say that, you know, the films, the books, you've just released The Wildest Cowboy, this amazing kids book as well. You're kind of in that league yourself.
No, you know what I mean, though. I'm very flattered by that, thank you. But like that book, that's years of work. I'm not joking. The first draft of that goes back to 2013. Everything I do takes years. What these people are amazing at. They're like Olympic athletes. They turn up and they just bang. It just comes out of their faces like that. Like Jennifer Hudson walks in and she's all lovely and goes, hi. And there's no fuss. There's no like, oh, I might need a minute. She just wanders in. She goes, play it back and goes, all right, let's do one. And then the first one comes out and you're just weeping. And because it's sort of, it's just amazing that someone can make that sound without any apparent effort. Yeah. So that's what it was like for most of the recording, actually. It was magical.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord.
that David played, and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall and the major lift, the baffled king composing hallelujah, hallelujah. Your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof, her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to her kitchen chair. She broke your throat and she cut your hair. And from your lips you drew.
For this score as well, used Joby Talbot again.
Joby Talbot,
who,
yeah.
What with on
I love that man.
Hitchhiker's Guide and yeah. Son of Rumble as well.
He's a man of many talents. Yeah.
Of course, Divine Comedy. But yeah. What's Joby's qualities for you in terms of what he is part of the team for you?
That's one of those people where do I start people.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why we've done it or done these films together and will keep doing it, is just because you've got that link. That link that goes beyond just being a talented person who produces lovely music. It's that deep understanding, and the process itself is so joyful. I mean, such a funny, lovely man. And he really will, we can talk in sort of gobbledygook to each other, and he'll understand if I go, it's got to be more like, oh, don't know. You know what I mean? Like, just the worst direction you could give anyone.
Yeah.
And he's like, what, you mean like this? He literally will say, you mean like this? And he'll play it on his piano live in the room with me. He does. We do a lot of stuff in the room together.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember with Son of Rambo, he was like, what are we doing with this theme? And he played something. I was like, yeah, I think it's got to be more like, and I remember saying something along the lines of, like, I'm going up a mountain in my pajamas. Like, I don't, like, and he's like, oh, okay. And he literally phoned me up after I left him. He phoned me up and he played stuff down the phone. I was like, that's it. Do that again. He goes, wait a minute. And he's holding it, the phone with his ear, and he goes, dum da dum da dum da 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 da. The theme like this. And I was like, that's perfect. And it was that lovely instant response. It's very playful.
Yeah.
And because then it becomes complicated for him, because then he has to orchestrate it and fit it to picture. But the core essence of what we work on tends to be a very lively, playful way of working.
I love how diverse he is, though, in terms of what he writes and makes. I was listening back to Hitchhiker's Guide score. It's huge and brilliant, and it reminds me of things like when I was growing up and watching, like, Wizard of Oz and all that kind of stuff. And it's got this kind of old Hollywood-type vibe to it, almost. It's kind of... It's beautiful, absolutely.
It's beautiful, and it's also, he had to do a crazy amount of work, because if you're doing like scary movie. You know, it's got to be scary. Yeah. It's got to be scary all the way through, pretty much. But he has to go from electronic book telling you about the existence of life to a whale coming to terms with his existence, yeah. and then a hero who's not really a hero. He's actually kind of useless, but you're trying to sort of go root for this guy. So he has a huge amount of work to do in that, or had a huge amount of work to do in that film, and did it kind of beautifully. And was such a passionate Hitchhiker's fan that there was no stopping him, really, in terms of experimenting and stuff.
The conversations, and what point did you start talking to him about music? Was it before you started filming, or how did it work
when did we start?
Yeah,
we'd actually done Hammer and Tongs, my production company used to have with Nick and Dom, had made a music video for his band Divine Comedy. Not his band, but he was in the band Divine Comedy, and we got to know this lovely man. At the same time, my wife was designing her own clothes and was styling bands to help support her collection.
Yeah,
and she styled bands and said, "This guy's really nice." And then someone said, "Oh, and he can write like string sections and orchestral music." So we got him to do a commercial for us for BT Broadband years ago. It's this big burst pipe, this big sort of action adventure thing, and he was amazing. We were like, "Oh, that's the guy. We found our guy." And then with Hitchhikers, it was a case of, I remember going to see him and saying, "Look, we might be doing this film, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy." And he did everything but spit his drink out and say, "Well, he's read it like five times. He was just like, knew every word.
Yeah.
And where do I sign, kind of thing." So we didn't have a problem in terms of getting him on board. It was more like, how should we treat this stuff?
Yeah.
Because there's so many aspects, like there's a theme that everyone wants to hear. But then you've got to come up with a load of new stuff.
And matching the voices and being under someone like Stephen Fry's voice and how that synergy works
and all
and
that.
And
then what do you do with the guidebook? Do you treat it like for humour? Do you treat it, or do you treat it like it's just technology, so pay attention? And that's when people like Nigel Godrich were very helpful, because Nigel came in and helped with all that electronica stuff.
Amazing.
He's good with bleeps and stuff, Nigel. I mean, underselling him. He's good with bleeps and
Wikipedia
stuff.
Page.
Yeah, yeah.
Nigel Godrich.
Nigel is listening. Sorry about that, Nigel. I didn't mean to undersell you that badly. But it's very much a sort of display of Joby's many, many talents. I mean, this guy's written operas and ballets and God knows what. and just such a lovely person to be in a room with, yeah. which is half the battle.
Yeah. Do you want really that is. Atmosphere to be...
Yeah, I do. I don't do fear and I don't do moody... I mean, he can get angry, oh boy, but not with me. He has a fantastic temper when it goes. It's brilliant. Like, I've seen him tear into an orchestra and, whoa, baby, you don't want to be there. You don't want to be in the string section when that's kicking off.
I always want to hear the orchestrated version of that. So the orchestra create a piece of score to go with him going at them.
Yeah.
You kind of in watching.
Here he comes. He's coming out of the mixing desk. Yeah, you know. I remember once him saying, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, but I remember him like being really frustrated because he has a sound in his head. He knows what it's trying to sound like. He's said it a few times now and nobody's picking up. And hitting the talkback mic and saying, yes, well, that was a bit better. It's an upward curve, I suppose. Let's do it again. You know, or something like that. And I remember thinking, whoa. But then he gets there and he's the most ecstatic, you know, composer you could have. But I love him for that as well, his passion.
Contemporary choices in Hitchhiker's Guide.
Now, what do we have in there?
Kerry Coleman, Al Green.
Yeah, Al Green.
Betty Wright.
Betty Wright has been in... I would put that song in everything I... honestly, I tried to get it in Sing.
Did you?
Shura Shura is one of my all-time favourite records. I made short films at art school and it was in one of those. It was like the main song and I can't get over just how great it is. I can play that a million times. It's like the perfect nonsensical thing, but musician-wise, it's just immaculate. And it's joyful. So I try and get that in every... I'll try and get it in the next one if I can. But Shura Shura was just in there because it was nice. And also, I remember when Martin Freeman was having to screen test, because it was kind of before he'd become Martin Freeman at Reverb. It was the studio...
Man,
we all knew...
Man.
It was... In England, we all knew him from The Office, but hadn't quite gone across the pond. You know, they hadn't had that big Golden Globes win or whatever it was. They did a big win somewhere.
Yeah, that I just got that scene as well from Love Actually with the girl.
Oh God, yeah, yeah. He's sort of
Is he fluffing? He's like the fluffer.
I don't think
thing.
I think a fluffer is someone.
Standing.
Yeah, it's
like
a standing because a fluffer
yeah.
is someone that spoke. Anyway, yeah, that's anyway, a different job.
Not for today.
Your listeners will know all about that. in this really wholesome room with like children's books everywhere. Yeah. We're talking about fluffing. Not good, not cool. But what were we saying? I can't remember now.
Martin Freeman before he
Oh yeah, so here. Yeah, because he wasn't as well known, we did the screen test with him and Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah.
And I just got a load of mannequins to pose as if they were at a party together. And all it was playing Shura Shura and Martin just standing there on his own in a dressing gown and Zooey coming in. There was no dialogue. She just came in and was sort of like trying to dance next to him and like, hi, how's it going, kind of dancing. And him great, basically getting into it and then ended up with just the two of them dancing really adorably to Shura Shura. And that was it. They saw that and they were like, that's great. He's great. And then, of course, he turned out to be wonderful. Yeah. So that song really has been a sort of, I know, like a lucky charm, I suppose. Yeah. Yeah.
Lovely. Mm. That's such a nice story.
Thank you.
Son of Rambo as well. The music in that's just fantastic. I love that film so
Thank
much.
You.
This might be wrong, but I heard a little fact about it as well. This is the geek in me listening to the DVD extras. In the scene where, is it Will's character's humming a Kraftwerk tune? Supposed to be Kraftwerk,
it
but
was,
then you
that's
had
right.
to redub the humming.
We did, that's right.
Because
God, do you know, I'd forgotten that.
You couldn't get Kraftwerk cleared.
Right, we
that
said,
right?
That's right, we did. We wanted, I think it was Tour de France, I can't remember for sure now, but that, we wanted a whole sixth form common room to be dancing to Tour de France, and it was, we had it all worked out, it's going to be amazing. And so cleverly thinking, oh, aren't we clever? He'll be humming it as he comes out because it's still in his head. And that's right, I'd totally forgotten until you said that.
D'Azur et Saint-Tropez, Tour de France, Tour de France, les Alpes et les Pyrénées, Tour de France, Tour de France, dernière étape Champs-Élysées, Tour de France, Tour de France.
That was the opposite of seeing. That was when we had a really teeny tiny music budget.
The tunes that you've got in there, though, are, they kind of resonate as brilliantly, like New Shoes, I
New Shoes, I'm glad you mentioned that one. Yeah, me too.
The special dance you do to that as well. Like,
yes, very shouldery head movement, isn't it? Yeah.
You
upper body
see us,
dance.
What we're doing.
We are looking amazing right now.
We're having a dance while we chat.
That was,
but
yeah,
that's
song,
a tune.
Yeah, and again, those were all really
the old
early
personal
on.
Choices.
Yeah, but also you are thinking, oh, that'd be good there. There's part of you when you're making a period film as well like that where you're thinking it'd be nice to trigger some nostalgia as well. You're ideally trying to find that one that you know but you haven't heard that much of recently.
Yeah.
And New Shoes, I Can't Wait, at that time felt like one of those. In fact, I remember making a playlist for all their cast.
Love Action by the Human League's another great choice as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really go wrong with that stuff. And I remember when we got Egyptian Reggae in there, being so happy with that, just the sound of that. Do, do, do. And it was, I saw it in Baby, it was in Baby Driver recently, and I was like, you could put that in anything. Every film should have a little
oh,
Egyptian...
Oh, thief, Edgar.
No. I think that's the thing. No, if anyone's guilty of thieving, it's me. Stolen so many songs from, that have been in other movies, and we started thinking, oh no, we can't have, you can't have Under Pressure, because that's been in loads of things. But then
it's the way that you do it and use
that's
it.
That's the thing that ended
and
up.
And it's been reworked by these characters, and it's part of their story.
Yeah, because I would start with this very purist thing, like, no, we can't have that. I've seen it in World's Greatest Dad. I saw it in, and it was in. But then we'd watch it, And we go, oh, it's really good, isn't it? It's really, that works. And that thing of it being, these are for a younger audience. Mm. I mean, we're all older, taking our kids to it, but so we'll know it, but they'll see it and hear it for the first time this way. So we better do a decent job of it, yeah.
It's funny you saying that, because I was telling you that I did a chat with Valerie Faris.
Yeah.
And that legendary scene at the end of Little Miss Sunshine with Super Freak.
Yeah.
She didn't dance to that.
What did she dance to then?
She danced to ZZ Top, Give Me All Your Lovin', when they filmed it, and it just wasn't right in the edit. And someone suggested to them Super Freak, and they were like, had that same reaction to you going, no, we can't use that, it's too obvious.
Yeah.
And they put it on, played it on a device whilst they played the, and they were like, perfect.
That's what happens. And my editor's really good at that stuff, because I'll say, no, or let's use this, and he'll very quietly say, okay, sure. And then he'll put something on that's completely appropriate. He's done that so many times and that was one of them. Under Pressure was one of them. And also there was a scene, I remember there's a car wash scene where the hero is this little koala. He ends up really down on his luck and having to wash cars with his body. And I came in and the sequence is exactly as I wanted it to be. I was really pleased, but we didn't have music for it, and he put Pavarotti on there. And it was like, oh, well, that clinched it. It was like, suddenly like, that's exactly why it's so sad and funny too. But and again, that song, I mean, it's probably used on a billion bank commercials and airlines. No, that's the other one, isn't it? But it just, you can't deny it.
No.
It's like, oh, I'm having that.
Yeah, totally. I remember, watching all your amazing videos that you guys did with Hammer and Tongs. They were all little short films, or they were all almost like cartoon episodes, some of them as well, like Pumping Your Stereo.
Yes, very much a cartoon. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
amazing filmic quality, I think, to those. Do you think that that experience of working on those music videos influenced the relationship you have with music and film?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the great joys of getting into music videos in the first place was trying to marry pictures with music that you loved.
Yeah.
And trying to capture why it's so great when that drum fill comes in by having lightning strike a monkey or something. You know what I mean? Like, the idea might be preposterous on paper, but what you're always trying to do is get that excitement across that you hear in the music, or something that you hear in the music you're trying to capture. It's the opposite way of making a film. Obviously, with a film, you tend to have the picture first and then find music to go with it.
Yeah.
And we're presented with a 3-minute song, and we're like, it's amazing. How do we communicate how amazing this is? And
yeah.
Sometimes it would involve, you know, like pumping on your stereo. It's like, how can we just show this brilliant band in another way and capture all those little nuances between them? Exaggerate them, so we built the puppet bodies.
Well, now that I've met you.
And other times it was like the Fatboy Slim one, which was in Evolution of Man, was like, this sounds like an epic, this right here, right now. It's got that kind of like da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it sounds like Jesus Christ. It's like the birth of time type thing. And then you're trying to catch, nail all the brilliant little things that Norman Cook has done in that song with something visual, so that people get as excited about it as you do.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Don't think that ever leaves you. You know, once you get it, that's really addictive.
Yeah.
And like people like Chris Cunningham have taken it to a surgical level where it's like, and everything's completely married.
Yeah.
And you can't separate the picture from the sound. But I get a real buzz out of that stuff and trying to apply that to something like Sing, where you've got a gorilla who's going to perform for the first time, and then using those things that you've learned about where that should drop, where you go, how, even where his eyes should be, you know.
Yeah.
Like, filming bands and working out when they look cool, right, when they look good and when they don't look good. And, you know, it was very often when they thought they were looking great, it was like, oh, we're not using that one. Mate, don't do that thing with your tongue ever again. Never.
I think as well there's good examples of how the video has added another layer of emotion to the music. So yeah. Coffee and TV for me is a really good example in terms of what you guys did with that. And whenever I hear the song now, I see the milk cart, and you know, and I think that the story, the narrative that you created within that video gave a whole new meaning to the song and a whole new kind of, I don't know, emotional sort of soundscape to it in a way.
Thank you. Well, I mean, all you're trying to do there is make people like the song as much as you do. And there was, started with a rhythm thing, so there's this walking do-do-do-do thing, so it really was that, like, something's going down the street kind of thing.
Do you feel like a chain store?
Most of them are terrible. By the way, that's not like a boast. It's an exorcism of bad ideas.
Especially when you're releasing them.
No, because that's the thing with sketchbooks. It's mainly a waste paper bin of like,
spewing.
And every now and then there's like something in there. And there was a milk carton idea, which was simply a milk carton goes looking for the kid who's printed on the side, the missing kid. And then it was like, oh, I could send the milk carton out looking for Graham. And then we went from there. To gravitate to an emotional connection to music as opposed to just a sensational one.
What are the...
I've never said that before. That's quite interesting. I've just learnt something about myself today.
Wicked.
Yeah, thank you for this, Edith.
No, it's all right. I was bizarrely...
I start crying now.
I thought you were going to when we started talking about Job, but I saw your eyes welling up. Love that.
No, I do. Yeah, I do.
But Badly Drawn Boys video I rewatched as well for Spitting in the Wind.
Oh, man. See, that's an emotional one, mm-hmm. too. I get very emotional as well at the idea... When you're listening to that song and you're thinking, this is really lovely, and it's so sad, the idea of having, you know, pissed your life away, and recognising that.
Yeah.
Been spitting in the wind, I chanced a foolish grin and dribbled on my chin, and now the ground shifts beneath my feet, the faces that I greet never know my name. Just give me something, I'll take nothing. Just give me something, I'll take nothing.
And then I remember thinking, well, it would be great. Everyone, I love Badly Drawn Boy, but wouldn't it be great if it was someone that everyone knew and that was looking back on a life? Whereas Badly Drawn Boy is very young and was at that time. His is all to come. So, but what if it was someone like Joan Collins? And when you have those thoughts, you start getting emotional because you start thinking, oh my God, that would be good. There's part of you is getting emotional because that would be good.
Yeah.
And part of you is thinking, God, that would be sad.
Yeah.
If I pull that off, that would be sad to see her sitting in a bath saying, what was all this for? Well, I've been spitting in the wind, you know, sort of. And then I would think, oh, if it feels like this to watch it,
yeah,
then it's worth doing. And that's when the mighty Nick Goldsmith would, like, you know, turn up like some sort of superhero and say, I'm going to get Joan Collins. And he did. He bloody did, you know. It's amazing. But
from dressing as a monkey to...
Yeah, he'll do... Yeah, I mean, that guy... Joan Collins. What can't he do? He was like that even at art school, though. I mean, really, we were the only year, I think... Like, most years when they graduated, they would... Because we were on a design course, they would end with, like, some little printed version of their work.
Yeah.
He went and got, like, something like 20 grand's worth of sponsorship from Adidas. We had this huge, like, full colour. It was massive. It was literally the size of this table, like, printed thing. We couldn't give them away because they were too big for people to carry home. Like, Nick didn't have any. He just walked in. It was like, didn't know anyone. It wasn't like it was an uncle that he could say, oh, Uncle Adidas, can I have some money? So he went in there and was like, and they were like, yes, here, Nick, go and
make
this check. He's like, go on, then let's go and make this massive magazine. Yeah, it's quite something. He still is. And it was, but that's the thing, though. What you're saying is you're trying to, if you feel that way about that connection with music early on, then all you're trying to do is hold on to that and make sure that throughout the process, you're not screwing up. That, you know, you're trying to protect that feeling and make sure you don't lose it.
Films or the scenes or the pieces of music that you remember being the first to make an impression on you as a kid watching film?
Oh, all of them. All of them, because our generation was the sort of the John Williams one where it was all music related. You couldn't separate it. When the bicycle takes off and the little boy is airborne, you know, you're shaking. I was nine and I can... You remember it to this day, and it's partly because of the story and it's partly because of the direction, but it's mainly because of that music that just, and even now, that sets me right off.
Totally.
And I know I'm going to get worse as I get older, just like my mum is. Like, she's really, like, properly pathetic now when it comes to emotional stuff, and I definitely feel myself going that way, and that music did it.
And Indiana Jones being one of the first films I ever saw at the cinema. I don't know, I found myself sort of having it in my head as a kid sort of thing.
Yeah, no, we did, didn't we? I think as a generation, we definitely had theme tunes playing. When we'd do something, it was always like, da-da-da! You know, you had your own soundtrack going, and it was some version of either some Saturday night TV show like the A-Team, or some, you know, we talk about movie moments often with that music playing, like Rocky and,
yeah,
you know, those big character moments that we all identify with, mm-hmm, that are classics, are normally accompanied by some brilliant musical motif. So, yeah, we couldn't separate them. So even when I was making my home videos at the age of like 11, I was making little crappy action movies. They all had soundtracks. Like, I remember Aaron Part 1. I couldn't put the original soundtrack on the DVD of Son of Rambo because it was all like, it was like Jan Hammer, you know, and Jean-Michel Jarre, because it all like had that. It was really important that we didn't just have an action sequence. It had to have like killer music over it. That's what made us watch it over and over again. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
The Wildest Cowboys, your brilliant kids book that's out, it could quite easily warrant music.
It is very musical. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, there's a banjo on the cover. It's a lot of singing. And it is a kind of song, I suppose. They do a lot of singing in it.
It's got a lovely rhythm to it.
Thank you. My favourite children's books, picture books, that we would read at night were very musical. I mean, Julia Donaldson's books are pretty much a song. I mean, they have verses and choruses and little middle eights. And and I like that musicality of it. Yeah. It makes it sort of fun and you can participate, especially if you can get like a call and answer thing going in or a chorus.
Yeah, and doing silly voices.
Yeah,
and all
you
that.
Get some silly voices in there.
I love it.
Sing
Two, what can you tell us?
I'm officially allowed to tell you nothing, but I can come mime.
Oh my God, no way!
Yes, and then,
whoa!
And then watch this.
No!
Yes!
Wow.
They're going to die. No, not really. That was a misdirect. It's very...
Early days,
but I mean, what's nice is that... Like, we've got the first 15 minutes up in terms of its already in story reel form. So we're going to watch that again tomorrow and just see how that's going. But it's really, I'm really excited about it because it's sort of like the first one, I'd never made an animated film before. So it was all 50% of it was just working out what the hell was going on. It was so different to anything I'd done before.
Yeah.
And now it's like, it's pure, just get on with it. Because I know, I know what that guy does now. And I know that if I say that, it's going to really annoy him. So, you know, there's a load of technical things that I've got the hang of. And so it's more like, right, let's get in there. And also, when you've established character, you can then change the rhythm of the storytelling. And you can, like that first film was multiple stories. And you can change that stuff. Mm. You can go, all right, well, let's do something else now. And watching the film with families was the highlight of my career, was watching that film play to audiences with kids. And that seeing them all dancing and running. They didn't know that I was there. They didn't know, oh, there's some people here who made it. They were just watching and thinking, right, okay, now I've seen that. I think I've got an idea of how we could go one further and improve on that. So it's really exciting. It's early days, but I'm not done for 3 years.
Wow.
Literally 3 years from now I'll be finished, but...
Okay, I'll meet you back here in 3 years then.
Done.
For part two.
I'd love to... Yeah, it would be definitely nice to meet again and see if I'm still
hopefully
as jolly.
Before then, but...
Well,
like, yeah.
We can meet before then. It's not off the, you know, not off the agenda, but yeah, a recap
but to
at the
talk,
end. Like,
sing two, three
yeah,
years from
I'll
now.
Probably be really angry and upset and...
I've started shouting at people.
Yeah. Whatever, Edith. Hate songs. I hate music.
I can't wait to see if Betty Wright's going to be in Sing 2 or not. We'll do my best.
If it is in there, this is where it was first mentioned.
Gaurav, thank you so much for your time, mate.
Thank
Always
you,
a
Edith.
Pleasure.
Lovely
and,
to see you.
I'm going off to watch Sing again.
Okay. Hope you enjoy it again.
I'm
Tura by Betty Wright. So good we played it twice, which is the very least we could do for the wonderful Garth Jennings to round off this latest episode of Soundtracking. My huge thanks to Garth for taking the time to talk to us. If you haven't seen Sing, Son of Rambo or Hitchhikers yet, you need to set that right immediately and head to your preferred search engines to find those music videos we discussed. You won't be disappointed. There are playlists for all of our shows via edithbowman.com, which is also the place to catch up with all of our previous episodes. And if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And please do keep sending your messages and spreading the word. All is greatly appreciated. Next up, brothers who may well find themselves with one of the biggest films in movie history, Avengers: Infinity War. We're joined by the fabulous Russo brothers and very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.